Brilliant. Boomer's here.
G'day and welcome to the Machinist Therapy Hotline. This week we are recording our podcast from Mars. We have taken many, many, many months to get here, but finally we have arrived. And the first person to touch base was Shane Paul.
Yo, yo.
With a panini. Tony Klauser.
Let's party.
Albert Rudzinski.
Cowabunga, dude.
While driving. And me, Jody Tuckwell, here on Luna MTH Starship Enterprise 1. Reporting for duty. Here we go. Let's get on with
the podcast.
Woo. We got some feedback here on Mars.
Feedback. Hey. Hey, it's good. I'm feeling good this week, gents. How about you guys?
Fantastic.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Hey, well, Albert, how fast are you going right now?
55.
Wow.
Pull in the clutch and rev the motor.
It ain't got no clutch, bro.
Stupid. Oh, no. What a pussy.
All right, well, then just punch it.
Coming from the guy whose car don't run.
Oh, face motor.
Yeah.
Whatever. So this week, I think most Instant Machinist community stories have been filled with Tony and his pump. So I think, Tony, you better give us the full lowdown of where you're at and whether you're actually in a good mood right now or a bad mood right now.
His Hold breast on, wait pump? Are you complaining? Well, that's a good question, Boomer. But no, that's working just fine.
I'm glad to hear that.
So, the mayor, are you? You're saying the stories were full. I mean, are you saying I overloaded the system with just?
No, okay. Not at all. I'm saying that if anything, it wasn't enough. There were times when I thought, well, where is Tony at right now? What is happening?
What's going on?
Where is happening? Is he replaced cartridge 14 or is he still on 12? I don't know now. I need to find this information out. Otherwise, okay, well, my head might explode.
All right. Well, here's the deal. When you get old, you start taking pictures and you just start writing numbers on stages so you can keep track of all this shit when you take it apart. If there's anybody out there, and I know there are some people out there that's taking apart one of them Grundfos pumps that has 13 stages, there's a lot of parts in there. There's a lot of little flying saucers. There's a lot of regular washers. There's washers with involute spline in it. There's discs. There's bowls. I mean, Jesus Christ. So anyway, I'll start from the beginning. I'll try and make it a short story, but as Jody says, I never do. But anyhow, he can edit this because that's what he does. So I had Jasmine in there running the shit out of this Akuma LT200M. We're making exhaust tips because we got another order for 1,000. And the guy's like, yeah, bring it. You know, we're all locked down and the stimulus money's out and people are spending money like crazy and they just want to buy exhaust tips and all kinds of cool shit. So we ordered like 2,000 within a month. So I said, let's do this. So she's running the shit out of this machine and all of a sudden we get an EC overload. That's when Hank was trying to work in the back of the cabinet and then the fucking ghost came in and he did an exorcism on him and tried to scare the ghost over to New Zealand to haunt Jody's machines. And he did for a while, but they came back and the pump kept overheating. And we didn't know why the pump was overheating, but it was blowing that breaker in the back of the cabinet like it was supposed to. It's a safety feature. So I decided, you know what? I need to just take a look. So I pulled the pump and there's pictures on the line. You guys have seen them. The screen was packed. I mean, there's two big screens in front of this system, so it's little shit that gets through. But it's this 2005 model, and I don't know. I don't know that I've ever pulled the pumps completely out before, but there was a lot of shit in there, jam-packed. And even paint from that one time when I ran fucking QualiCam that took all the paint off the inside of my machine, plugged up my screen big time. But anyhow, that's another story. So I pulled the pump and took it all the way apart and found some parts that had been grinding together and galled together and just bad. And then I found a part that was broken in half. And I thought, okay, well, I started getting on the line trying to find parts. And Facebook, I just recently joined a Facebook group for Akuma users only. And these guys know their shit and they're always bouncing stuff. There's some old vets and they're older than me that really know their shit. And so they're like, yeah, I mean, we have those and we buy those all the time, but we just replaced the whole pump. And I go, well, the pump is $4,000. They're like, yeah, well, we work for a multi-billion-dollar Japanese company, so that's not really an issue. I said, well, that's not the case here. But anyway, one gentleman told me to go to OTP, which is a big pump house back there. Another one told me to go to Dapper Rack. So I called OTP and he goes, yeah, what model you got? And I told him, and he says, well, here's the parts list that you need, but I can't sell it to you. I said, well, I got you on the phone. Can you send me some info? He said, sure. So then I tried DapRag, and she said, well, here's what you need, but you're in California and we're not, and I can't ship you the parts. And I said, okay. So I got finally on to Grundfos down in Fresno, and you can't really actually talk to a human being. It's just like talking to FedEx. So you call and they say, they give you 50 million different types of pumps. Like, where are you at? I mean, are you in the aquarium? Are you pumping out a sewer? I mean, these guys have pumps everywhere. So I finally got to industrial machine tool type stuff and typed in my zip code, and they gave me this number for Hayward. So I got a hold of this guy in Hayward. He was a young kid. He said, send me some pictures, and I did. And it had a Japanese writing on it, and he just fucking shut down. He's like, I've never seen one of these with Japanese writing on before. I'm going to have to phone a friend. I'm like, what? Everybody back Midwest knew exactly what I needed, and you don't? No, I'm waiting for a phone call from Grundfos. That's all right. So I waited for one day, waited for 2 days. That was on a Friday, Monday, Tuesday, nothing. So I get back to a hold of the gal from DapRag, and I said, look, this kid out here is struggling. I said, is there any way you can send him the information on what you got so we can get this ball rolling? And then, well, lo and behold, she's out of the office. I get an automatic email kickback in the office. But anyway, she was monitoring her email from home. So she sends it to the president of their company, and he sends it on to the president of Grundfos. And then all of a sudden I get these emails from these guys, and like, look, are you getting any attention or any service because you need to get help here? How's it going? And so I finally was so frustrated, I called that place back in Hayward again and just pushed a different button and got a hold of a different guy other than that kid named Scott. And within an hour, this guy, Scott, had part numbers and prices. I'm thinking, yeah, awesome. So he says, the parts are in Memphis. I said, okay, cool. That's going to take a while to get here. Let's order it blue. He says, all right, fine. So order it blue. And I wait 3-4 days, nothing. Finally, it shows up. Well, we go to lunch, and the FedEx guy shows up. We go to lunch at 12. He shows up at 12:12 and sticks a note on the door. I'm like, okay, great. So we come back, and I call the tag number and dial it in. And I said, I'm trying to find my package. Well, once again, I can't talk to a human. So I'm clicking this, and this robot goes, well, we'll try again before 4. Will you be there? I go, fuck yeah, I'll be here. And so I waited till 4, and nobody showed up. So at 4:30, I jammed over. I called again. I said, other options. And I said, talk to a human. And I talked to this lady in India, and she says, as far as I can see, the parts are in the hub. Go to the hub now, Tony. And so I go to the hub, and I drive there, and I wait in line with my stupid little gay mask on outside on the sidewalk. Only one at a time can go into FedEx. And so I'm waiting if somebody comes out, and I go in. I said, so how can I help you? I said, I'm trying to find this. I give her my tag, and she reads my tag, and she's like, oh, so-and-so just left. He'll be back in a minute. I said, okay. She's like, do you want to hang out? I said, okay, sure. So I hang out. And then my phone rings, and that's one of the guys from the shop. I said, hey, you know that package you're looking for from FedEx? The guy just dropped it off. I go, okay. So I told the girl, I said, I'm going to leave now because apparently the package is at the shop. So I go to the shop. I'm so excited. I get out the razor knife. I open the box. I'm thinking all my parts in here, because what the guy told me was, Tony, you have a 13 or 11 stage pump. They don't make a rebuild kit for 11 stage pump. They make one for 13. But you can take the parts out of that 13 and make it work. But prior to that, he told me that he would only sell me a complete stack because he said, he said, I've tried to sell single parts before and people just mess it up. He's all, I'm not going to say 99% of the time. I'm going to say 100% of the time I sell parts and they start to put it together and they call me back and they say, oh my God, I didn't realize there was a little washer underneath that disc in between these two disc thingies. I need that washer. And he's all, you got to realize there's a $7 minimum order from Grundfos and blah, 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 blah. And this guy liked to hear himself talk. I said, look, I've already taken mine apart twice and put them back together and cleaned them. I said, I'm pretty sure I could do it. So if I show you, nope, I can't do it. Not 99%, but 100% of the times people screw it up. Okay, fine. And then he changes his tune and says, well, you could take this 13 stack and tear it apart and use the 11 that you need. I'm all right, fine. So I was super excited to open the box and find all these millions of parts in there that I could just go through and fix my machine up. And I open the box and there's two bowls, a bunch of washers, and some gaskets. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And the two parts that they sent were ones with bushings in them that I didn't even need. And so anyway, I wrote him an email. I said, you know, I can't even explain to you how frustrated I am. I was led to believe that I was going to get a stack of 13 and I could dig through them and fix my 11. And this is what I got. And so I posted that in my story. And then I went home And like I said, I woke up this morning and I thought, you know what? I got a couple baby pumps over there that aren't doing anything. I'm just going to tear into it. Well, first of all, my first thought was, Tony, take that sheet metal frame that these big tall pumps are setting in, get the saws all out, cut the fucker off and set one of them little pumps on it and just get making parts. And I thought, you know what? I pulled the pump off. I put it on the workbench and I said, you know what? This thing looks like the same diameter. It's a short stack, but I bet you there's some parts in there that'll work. And sure as shit, when I unbolted the whole thing and put it on the workbench, it had everything I needed. All of them were in good shape. They all fit on my big pump. It sacrificed its liver and its left kidney. And I'm making chips with coolant again. It didn't cost me a fucking thing because those parts are going back. And
right. So that was the pumps. So you basically took away the pump from another machine to put into that one in the end.
In parts, yes.
Just the parts. Yeah. Oh, man. Do you kind of sit back and think, shit, I wish I'd thought of that a week ago?
I had thought about that a week ago. I thought I would take that whole pump out and make it work. But I thought, I mean, I put faith into these people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, get me some stuff quick. And then when I got that email from the president, he said, well, you know, you sound frustrated and we're going to share this information with our HR team and train these people that need training, because you should have been, if the kids saw it had a Japanese writing on it, he shouldn't have shut down. There's people that could figure that out. I've been doing this for a long time, and it's just frustrating when people say, well, we're going to call back to Memphis, and it usually takes them a day or two to put it in the box and put a label on it. I'm like, a day or two to put it in a box and label it? Who the fuck are these people? I mean, I could walk – send Hillbilly Hank over there with parts, and he could go up and print his own label and get you some shit out the same day.
You know what the lesson and the moral of the story is?
I'm waiting.
Don't trust people. And if you try to trust people, stay the fuck on their ass, because most of these people, it's just a Mick job, you know, and it's unfortunate because, like, for you, it's like a big deal. Like, you need to make parts or you don't make money.
Yeah.
And it's like the people that are sending you pump parts, they don't care, because if they go to work, they still get paid whether they send your parts out or not.
And you're exactly right. But in their defense, but another factor in this whole fucking scheme of things is that everybody's working from home on their laptops with their phones. Mm. So when I called this guy and said, track my package, he's like, oh man, I can't. My computer just froze. I tried to load a PDF and I can't see it right now. I'll have to call you back.
I was going to say, it makes no sense, because you have, you know, they'll have, you know, a manual of the pump with an exploded view of the parts that it goes to. And you go, well, if you've got a parts list for a manual and it has the part numbers on it, surely we can just order the parts. But isn't that the whole point? Otherwise, what's the point?
Here's what I've been told is that, yes, in the past they used to sell individual parts. But, I mean, and even people, the feedback on Instagram was, and even on Facebook, it's like, oh, wow, you have that thing torn apart on two carts and you got them numbered. But those things go back into specific order. I go, yes, they do. And there's washers and spacers. And I think, like the guy said, 9 times out of 10, if they sell you individual parts and then you put it together and turn them on, it's going to fucking grenade because you're not getting the shit right. I mean, a lot of people aren't going to pay attention to detail and do it correctly. If they sell you an entire stack, you just pull off all your shit, drop this down, put the impeller on, screw it down with the nut, and there you go. You can't go wrong. So I don't know the repercussions of them. Like, hey, you sold me two bowls and two discs, and then we put it together and it failed. So I want my money back or whatever. You know, it's like maybe they just got sick or tired of that. It's like, you know, they don't know if you're responsible or if you're a CAD/CAM baby or if you're just a fucking idiot. So, it's, I mean, really, you know what I'm saying, Jody? I mean, it's like you would be kind of like that. You're like, well, I could sell it to you guys because you guys know how to do it or you pay attention to it. But a lot of people don't. I mean, they think, oh, it's so many parts, but there's a series of parts. And there's a series of disc bowls in the disc, and then all of a sudden there's a bowl with a bushing in it. Like, what the fuck? And then a disc, bowls, and disc, and another bowl with a bushing in it. Like, this is random. Why is it done like this? Well, they have their reasons, but I was literally thrilled to get all that shit back together, and I tightened it down on the workbench, and I spun it around by hand, and I made sure nothing was rubbing, and I put it in the machine, and I put all the wiring back together because I am not an electrician, but I took pictures of it. And I put it all back together, and I turned the main power on, first, and nothing exploded. Nothing smoked, nothing melted. I'm like, fuck, I'm so far so good. So then I turned the aperture on, and I just bumped the coolant button. Like, well, nothing's screaming, and juice was flying. Because I did, and I have learned this, is take off all the fittings when that pump is mounted and fill that fucker full of coolant. Like, prime the pump. You don't want to run it dry. There's notes all over that thing. Do not run dry. So I filled it full of coolant, and then put the check valve back on the coolant hose to both pumps. And they both fired up, and they both shot juice, and nothing smoked, and nothing tripped a breaker. And so Jazzy's got to come to work on Monday and crank on those 1,000 parts.
So you couldn't have gone to Akuma about parts for the pump?
I could have, and I did, but the guy I went to was on vacation, and he didn't have an auto response. But here's the deal why I didn't go there first, because – I mean, just saying this with all kindness, if you can go directly to Grundfos and not go to Akuma, if Akuma gets it from Grundfos, I mean, you know how it goes.
It's
not going to be the same price.
Yeah.
I'm not dissing Akuma, but I thought I would just go straight to the source. But maybe next time I wouldn't. I don't know.
It'd be interesting to just get whether they would sell you just individual parts. I mean, you've done it now anyway. You're up and running, but just – as a matter of fact, why not just say, hey, Akuma, can you just tell me first of all, you just supply me with just the parts I need, and what would they cost? And maybe you'd be surprised.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Like I said, I did find out what the entire pump cost. It was $4,000, because a lot of people on Instagram said, well, if it was me, I'd just put a new pump in, son, just get on the Grangers and dial it up and get one of them things, and it'll work just fine. Well, I did call Grangers, and they said, that's out of our league. And so, it's $4,000. I don't even know what the lead time was on one, but anyhow.
Goodness.
Yeah, so anyway, it's Friday, and it's working, and I feel good.
Yeah, that's good. So that's the end result is, actually, you are in a good space right now.
I am, and I told Katie this morning when she came in, I said, I'm really amazed that I got all that shit back together and it works, because it was kind of sketch. And I said, I took things apart twice, and I had them all side by side, and I rebuilt both them pumps at the same time. This piece goes on that piece. This piece goes on that piece. This piece goes on that piece. I mean, guys, there's a lot of fucking, you saw the pictures, two carts full of fucking discs.
I actually didn't even realize how many bits are in a pump. I saw that and went, no, that can't be the same fucking pump, surely. It can't be. Yeah. He's basically dismantled 30 pumps, and he's trying to build a mega pump.
That's what it kind of looks like. Yeah, it was crazy. Hey, but I'll check that off my list of something else that I've done. I feel like a fucking maintenance man around that place, I tell you what.
Yeah, you've been under the pump with fixing things, but fortunately...
under the pump. You woke up and thought you were funny today, didn't you, Joyce?
I sure did. Just don't laugh around Albert, because he knows you're stupid.
Oh, shucks.
Hey, Boomer, what have you been doing the past couple of weeks?
Just working, man. This week we had, we got one person out at night because of possible exposure to COVID. We had the shop foreman was on vacation this week. The guy that runs the Integrex was on vacation this week. And then we had another guy out because he messed his knee all up and couldn't walk. So it was a wild week, and kind of wore, 3 or 4 different hats the whole week, and just, did my best to keep things going.
Jeez. So when we were talking on our little chat before, I thought, throughout the week, I thought that you'd had quite a few people leave, and I was thinking, shit, like that's, but you just mean that they, just because of, not that they've left, but they had issues, which means they couldn't come to work.
Yeah, just vacations and, other things.
Right. Yeah, you must be able to plan for that, though, or was it like just a last-minute vacation?
I thought he was planning for it, but apparently he didn't. So I was, on the horn with the weekend shift guys trying to get people to come in and work overtime and fill in those positions as much as I could.
Right. Okay, so no big dramas for you this week. Just a few little sort of things to resolve, but nothing major.
Yeah, no, nothing major.
Okay. What about you, Albert? How's your week been going?
It's been a little crazy, to be honest. The last several weeks have been fucking nuts. We had like some projects and stuff. It's been literally just like one big project after the next, like, due. So like every week has been like just a complete shit show. It's good. It's just like, it's really stressful because it's like, all, I don't know. Every customer is like kind of down our cracks right now, and it's fine. Like, I get it, but it's just, like I said, kind of mitigating like one project disaster after the next. And, you know, it's a lot of juggling, basically.
You're finding it a wee bit tough, or you're coping?
I mean, we're making do, but it's like, you know, you can only do so much in a day, and you can only get so much done in a week, and you can only, I mean, do your best every single day. Like, if you, I don't know what to tell people sometimes after a certain point. It's like, look, it's just going to take this long. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I'm not going to push crap out the door just because you want it sooner. So, and I don't know. So this one customer that we've got is just, it's a new customer, and we're really trying to like get this stuff finished up for them in timely fashion. Like, we're like a week late on some stuff, and you know, we have other projects in the shop that we're a lot more than a week late on. And I don't know. Some customers seem to be like pretty timeline sensitive with stuff, and then other customers, Albert, not so much. Yeah.
Albert, are you turning left or right?
I am turning left. Why? What does it sound it. Like?
I knew it. It's left. Totally left. Anyway, go on.
You're really just killing my stride here, Tony.
I'm sorry, but you know I love you, man.
I don't even remember what I was talking about anymore.
Customers are in your crack.
No, you know, we're a little bit late, and I feel bad about it. So, like, I'm trying to push my guys to do as much as they can, and I'm dealing with other problems. Like, my one employee just doesn't deal well with too much stress on his plate, so I kind of try to trickle feed him stuff to, you know, to do, which it is what it is. I feel like I kind of pushed him to his limits, and I know where he's at, like work capacity wise. And so like, I'm trying to be understanding of that and like give the customer realistic information. Cause it's like, I know if this guy gets overwhelmed and stressed out, like he's going to start screwing things up, and then it's going to just make more problems. So it's been like a walking a tightrope, honestly. So, and then like my other guy, I kind of told him, I was like, look, we're under the gun on a lot of this stuff. This is the guy who called out cause he had a tummy ache. I think we talked about him last week or whatever, but
some dodgy lettuce.
Yeah, it must have been.
Is he the same guy that runs everything at 12,000 RPM?
No.
Okay.
No, that's Mo. I'm talking about Larry.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
Larry the lounge lizard.
Yeah, like Mo Larry Curly. I don't know if you guys got that down there in Kiwi Land. That.
Yeah, who was the other brother? Oh, remember Shemp?
Oh, Shemp sucked. No one likes Shemp.
Yeah, that's why they cut him out.
Shemp, fuck Shemp.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, fuck
Shemp.
I don't know what you're talking about, but carry on.
Tough crowd.
The Three Stooges.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Sure, sorry, you've heard of it.
American TV reference.
Yeah. Yeah, good on you.
Yeah, you sounded stressed out, man. I was looking at your stuff this week, and I was like, you're doing a lot of cool shit, and it's like, I mean, your stuff's more intense than what I do by far, but if you had idiots walking around that just were not helping and hindering, then the stress level's got to get up there.
Just like, it's like there's, like when we get busy, like I know that like keeping things clean and organized isn't always like the first priority, you know, because it's like we got to get stuff out the door. But it's like when we've been busy for so long and you have people that don't make cleaning a priority, it drives me fucking nuts. Like,
yeah, if somebody splatter paints the back of the toilet seat, they need to stop and just fucking clean it up, man. You know, this next guy comes along and take a crap and look at Instagram, wants to have a clean place to sit down.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know, man. I want to maintain like a certain standard or quality of just like shop, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, some people just don't get it, and they don't appreciate it, and they don't care about it. And it's just like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter how many times you tell them. It doesn't matter what you do or say. It's just you're talking to a brick wall, and it's fine. You know, it's like every person kind of has their strength and their weakness. So it's like, I try to recognize that, because like I do gripe about my employees, but, like, you know, everybody's kind of good at certain things. So, you know, it's like I guess it's kind of readjusting my expectations of what they're capable of, you know.
How many guys do you have actually working with you?
I have two guys in the shop, and then I have Cindy. She does, like, all the accounting and bookkeeping and stuff like that. Okay. And Cindy's like my shop mom. She's, like, very she's like, she's an adult. She's, like, put together, you know.
Mm-hmm. Is she the one I met at IMTS a while back? Was she with you? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So it's not much. Like, my
left-hand woman.
Yeah. Not much different than what we got going on out here in California. I mean, I've got, I know a gentleman named Omar who will do anything that I ask. I mean, whether he's sawing stuff or mopping or running parts. And then we get Jazzy when she's around, and then Katie, you're all run machine, make paychecks, and then come down and do whatever else we need to do. So it's, yeah, small business, mom pop shop can get stressful, but yeah. Yeah, you know, I don't know what we're doing wrong, but that guy, Danny Rudolph, I mean, he works hard. And he has a lot of machines going on. He makes a lot of parts, but he gets to go swimming after work. He drinks beers. He makes s'mores to go camping.
Danny does it right. He does it a lot like my buddy Ryan Bankel at Imago Manufacturing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They both work out of their house. Like, they have a shop at their house, and they basically only employ family members. So, like,
that's true.
That's it. They're, you know, from, like, a personnel standpoint, they're, like, they're small. You know, they're not trying to, like, be, like, a large business or whatever.
Yeah, but they're still getting a lot of business. Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of variables out of the situation, though, when you've got family members or, like you're saying, I mean, it's immediate, and there's, like, well, once again, that's the same here, too. I mean, when I put my kid on front of that machine and she's telling me that this isn't, you know, this thing has been wadding up on chips every time I take it out, maybe we should take a look at it, and then there's a nozzle plugged. I mean, there's so many people that would just keep pushing the button.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, so Ryan's business is pretty interesting because didn't he install, like, an entire field of photovoltaic panels to power his machines?
Yep. Yep,
what the fuck did you just call them?
Photovoltaic panels.
It's called solar.
It's the same thing, you idiot.
God damn, you're just trying to make it sound all fancy and shit. Photomagenic.
Yeah, so he got that paid for, actually. The county will pay. Yeah, wow. So basically he applied for, like, a grant through, like, McHenry County or something, and I don't think that they pay for all of it or some of it up front or something like that, but, like, they'll pay him back over, like, I think 3 or 5 years, I want to say, he was telling me. And it's a pretty sweet deal because, like, obviously now they're going to be, like, net positive power wise and, like, they'll actually get money from it.
Yep.
So yeah, it's a pretty cool setup, but he does that as much as he can to, like, get grant money. There's an organization that we just started working with called IMEC. It's like Illinois Manufacturer something. But they kind of help walk you through, like, the grant process for each county or whatever that you're in. So,
right.
I mean, if there's free money out there, why not fucking take it?
Totally. Totally. There's always opportunities for that stuff in no matter where you are in the world, I believe. You know, there's organizations that want to encourage, you know, small businesses and even medium to large businesses as well, but just by way of grants. And I think, well, you know, that's one part of business that, I don't know, you need mentors to help you through those things so that you get the best outcome from it, you know?
Yeah. And you know what? I was impressed with, I mean, he's a small shop like us, Albert, but he just became ISO certified, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And you don't need to be, I think that's like a common misconception too about going ISO, is that you need to be like some big shop or whatever. But the reality is that actually going ISO when you're small makes things a lot easier.
Yes.
Because, like, if you've got, like, let's just say 8 or 10 guys or something like that, and you're trying to convince them and teach them all these new processes and stuff that you're implementing, it's like, good fucking luck, man. You'd be lucky to get them to sweep the floor. Mm-hmm. But if you hire people on and you're already ISO, and when you're training them and teaching them all these, like, ISO practices and principles and just, like, the way you do shit around the shop, it's like, oh, okay, that's just how we do things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why everybody's told me to start small. So we're starting that process as well. It's been a little bit fucked getting going here. We're trying to like implement like an ERP system, and yeah, so it's just like doing that stuff is like extra credit. You know, you got to like stay late and work on it or do it whenever you can. So it's, you know, hard to fit that extra stuff in into the day other than like normal production and programming and purchasing and ordering and all that jazz.
Yeah, yeah. But it opens so many more doors. I mean, I can't tell you how many parts, sample parts, I missed out on with Parker when they say, they'll send me an RFQ and they're like, hey, can you do this? We need thousands of them and I'll bang one out real fast. It's out of brass. Yeah. And it's, and I'll show them and they're like, that's awesome. How much? And I'll tell them like, oh, sorry, customer is requiring you to be ISO certified. I'm like, fuck. Yep. Doesn't happen. Unless you can get, like I said in the past, you can get like second or third tier, have somebody else's name on the bottom line that signs off on it. You know, I'm making it. I send it to Albert. Albert certified and he sends them to the customer. It's like, whatever.
And also,
yeah, we get some work like that actually too.
But like for Ryan, for example, I mean, now he'll be able to start going through the audit process each year, and you know, which will be easier and easier. And then as he grows, he's sort of already got that experience and expectation of what needs to happen. So it's kind of quite a cool way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Yeah. No, he's doing good things over there. It's don't get me wrong, Ryan's still lazy. Like, he takes naps and stuff during the middle of the day.
Oh, yeah. Naps? You can tell that. I mean, he looks like a stoner, 100%. Like,
yeah, no, he's too stupid to do drugs.
Oh, I really? I like the old truck that he cruises around in when he delivers parts.
Yeah, no,
hang on. When you say he's too stupid to do drugs, is that because he laughs at your jokes? Is that how you've gauged that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ryan probably thinks I'm funny. That's definitely how I know he's stupid. you should go check out Ryan's shit. He's doing it right. He thinks he's Jesse James, but he's a good dude, and I would be
kind of looks like him, huh?
But like, hey, he was a good sport with the Machinist Therapy Hotline barbecue vest.
Yeah, I gave him fucking titanium to make the bottle opener.
Did you?
Yeah.
So I did hear successfully that the guys, the brothers, have it over there now.
Oh, Mari Tools.
Yeah, he told me, I don't know what we're going to do with it, but we'll try to make it amazing. Oh, that's cool.
Well, we know in fact, we've all talked about this. He needs to do a mega fucking burnout in his Mustang and wearing the vest, or one of them hanging out of the Mustang while they're doing a burnout, maybe wearing the vest with nothing else on, eating a banana. That'd be cool. God, I'd like to see that.
This is
always still bananas with you.
This is still where Jody woke up and thought he was funny today.
Oh, come on. Give me a break. Jesus.
All right. I give you a break. All right. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good. It was sort of stuck in no man's land for a while. So
yes, it was.
But in all fairness,
I'm jealous of whoever gets it next. I would think there might be something cool in the box along with it coming from Marital.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do have cool shit.
They do have some really cool stuff. The back scratcher was exceptional. Have you got a back scratcher?
No. I wonder how that one guy's colon cleanse went that was wearing it last.
No, he wasn't wearing it last.
The guy laying up on the mill with the lock line pointing at his bum?
No, he wasn't wearing it last.
Who was wearing it after him?
What's his name? The true Croatian sensation. The dude that's basically always,
that's right. The guy with the tan lines.
He's always, yeah, he's got a tan line. Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah. He doesn't actually work. He just rides his push bike everywhere. While doing selfies. Stop the podcast! Ho ho, boys! The barbecue vest is on the move again. Currently, destination Mari Tools. The guys there are going to do something cool with it, I think. What do you think, Tony?
Well, I think they probably will, but we now realize that, you know, if you've been following MTH, IMTS has been canceled, so it's not going to be around until 2022. So if people keep bolting shit to that fucking vest, we're going to have some special instructions about picking it up so you don't get a hernia.
Yeah, and also every time you go to ship it, it's probably going to cost more each time you ship it.
Pretty soon you're going to have to go FedEx free, bitches.
So what we'd like to suggest is that if you want the vest next, you need to send us a video as to why we should get the Marital guys to send it to you next.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good idea. What do you reckon?
Yeah, post it in your story and tag us.
Post it in your story, tag us, and we'll be in contact with the Marital guys, and we'll talk amongst ourselves for a bit, and if you're going to be the person that's going to get it next, we will make sure it comes to you with something special in the box for you. How about that?
And there's a kind of a time limit on it, too. You don't want to keep it for a month or 2 months. You just kind of want to keep it for a couple of days and then pass it on, because, you know, speed is getting it on to the next person, and that's key.
True, true. Okay, so let's get on with the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Anyhow, so this week we had put a few posts up. So some of you that listen to us may have realized that we started to switch it around a little bit. And so we're going to take a week about to take control of the Instagram. So the past 2 weeks was Shane and Tony. And Shanus, you put up a post asking about coolant delivery systems to machines.
Mm-hmm. I did.
I thought there was some interesting comments that come from that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the two shops I've worked in, the first one we had kind of the mixing station at one point in the shop, and you would fill 5 gallon buckets and then carry them across the shop. And so it was, you know, cumbersome. You're always spilling stuff. And it kind of caused people, because I mean, let's be real. If you don't make it easy, people aren't going to necessarily keep on up on the coolant as well as they should.
That's true. But you know
and
what?
So I, at that,
I was going to only rip you for 1 second. I must say that is probably, and I'm following Coolant Man Mark's advice also, one of the most accurate ways to mix 5 gallons of coolant is dumping it in by hand in a 5 gallon bucket of water and stirring it.
Oh, definitely. But, you know, like I said, you'll have people that, I mean, it goes back to what we've basically been talking about this entire episode, is you have people that don't care. And I think, you know, being lazy is a lifestyle, and it's not something that, if that's how the person is built, that's how they're built. They're not going to necessarily change that when they come to work, and there's nothing you can really do to make them change. And so make it easy on people. They're not going to maintain it correctly, and then you're going to start having issues. So at this company, we have the 55-gallon drum. It's on a stand that rolls. It's got a long hose on it, and you wheel it right up to the machine, and you flip the switch. It's coming out. You check the concentration with the refractometer, put it in exactly what you need, exactly how much you need, and then you turn it off, and you wheel it to the next machine. So, I mean, that really makes it pretty easy. I know I saw a few people have like some different centralized units, which, I mean, that's like beyond ideal, but that's also, you know, quite an investment.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people are, Hillbilly Hank does it with a paint stick and a bucket, you know, nothing wrong with that though.
And he tastes it too.
Is that how he tells? He doesn't use a refractometer?
Just right.
But I was going to say, he's going to have to add a pump repairman and, you know, cross-country, you know, sales negotiator to his resume after this latest fiasco.
You're right, Boomer. He's a busy man. He's going to need an agent. I mean, have him call you.
I don't know if you want to do that. We just get drunk.
The central, like a centrally located integrated system. One of the guys down the road from us, he actually commented on the post about that he's got a full central system. But one problem that he says is if you suddenly get, you know, a bacterial issue or one problem, then every machine has a problem. You know, like it's
– that's true.
That's what our current coolant guy said too, because we had – we had looked at a couple different systems, Eerie's, and I forget the other one. But he was like, you know, what are you thinking? Like, as soon as you get one issue, then the whole shop is an issue.
Yeah. It's like, coronavirus of coolant.
Yeah. We were looking at a continuous system that constantly is turning over every machine in there. And I mean, it was quite a deal. But that was his thing. He's like, no, don't do that. Because I've seen like huge OEMs have like the whole place go bad, you know, in like 100,000 square foot building that's just, you know, packed in with machines.
That's a good point, because when I worked at one shop down in Santa Rosa, like I said, you guys have all heard the story about my boss, the foreman that was the total ass that treated everybody like shit. And he ran this one brand new horizontal mill that came in, and he ran it on days. But there was a night shift that worked after us. And this little Mexican guy told me, he's like, you know what, Tony? Last night after that motherfucker left, I went and I took the biggest, longest leak right in his coolant tank. And so when he's spinning that fucking 5-inch fly mill tomorrow and it's blowing around his face, it's my piss. I'm like, are you for real? He's all, oh, for real. I'm like, oh my God.
I remember there was this Scottish guy that I knew many, many years ago. And I basically was about to start over a shift, and we came round to where the trowels were, and this guy stood taking a leak straight into the through the door into the machine. And I was like, Drew, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, well, the toilet's so far and my shift's about to end. I was like, how often has he been doing that? You know what I mean? Like, you don't know.
Yeah, we had a guy at the other shop, and I caught him like four different times spitting in the machine. And it was when I ran the night shift there, and he did it again, and I saw him, and I was over there saying, like, dude, I've told you time and time again not to do that. Like, what gives? And he basically said, fuck you. And so I fired him, and then I got in trouble the next day and was told I can't fire people.
Are you talking about, like, chewing tobacco, Boomer? Like a big old spat?
No, it wasn't chewing tobacco, but he was one of those guys, he'd go out at break and like power drag like three cigarettes and his teeth were just like black, and it was just gross. And he was constantly like coughing this shit up. Yeah. And then it got to where if I was looking over there, he'd look right at me and do it just because he knew that I couldn't do anything about it.
That's messed up.
Yeah. No. So I told the other guys that were running that machine, like, hey, you know, I wouldn't run that fucking thing.
Wow. Mm. Joke's on him. He's probably got lung cancer.
I'm sure he does.
He quit and went to work for Whole Foods.
Well, how would you go about motivating your employees? So, Boomer, you're already on the front foot here. So, go.
You know, it's tough. It's like I said, you know, lazy is a lifestyle. And, you know, we have some guys, like, just watching them walk from place to place is like mind numbing. there's like zero hustle. They don't care. And it's like, you know, there's things you can't teach people. And I try my hardest to give everyone a fair shot and to show them everything, because I was in that environment where, you know, people wouldn't show you shit and you had to figure it out for yourself. And if you did ask them a question, you'd better fucking pay attention, because if you asked it again, you know, you were going to get your ass chewed. And so I try to be fair with everybody, be straight up, you know, here's how you do it. Here's how I do it. Here's what to watch for. And half the time the guys are just staring off into space, you know. I think we talked in the chat a little bit. I had a guy and I was trying to show him how to indicate live tools in, and then someone from the weekend shift was there picking up his check or something. And then he just like walks off in the middle of it to go talk with him. And it's, you know, when he came back, I tried to explain to him, like, look, like, I don't have to show you this. I don't have to do anything. I could have you, you know, go help in inspection while I set this job up. And you know, you can come back when it's running, but I'm taking the time to show you this. And this is stuff that, you know, took me a long time to learn and hone. and I'm just giving it to you. But if that's how you're going to act, then I'm not going to do that. And so that kind of straightened him out a little bit, I think, at least for that afternoon.
That had to be fucking very frustrating. I mean, I think I even said in the chat too, I said, if I was taking the time to show somebody how to do things like that correctly, and then he just said, hey, my buddy's here, he's getting his check, and he walked off. I mean, I wouldn't have been as calm as you, but when he came back, I'd be like, you know what? Fuck you. Here's a broom. Go sweep the shop for the next 2 hours, because I was trying to show you something very important that's going to get you further along in your life and move you up the fucking totem pole. And you're just blowing me off. Like, who the fuck are you? You know, one of the things I think about, and it just kind of smacked me upside the head yesterday. It was like, when you get on a machine maintenance, you know, I'm digging around these coolant pumps and I'm doing all this stuff. And like you said, Boomer, you're wiping down the Integrex and taking care of things. And one of the things that was ingrained in my brain when I first went into the really fierce shark tank of job shops, and the people stressed on me, that's back when I used to work till 4:30, but I stayed till 4:45, 15 minutes for free, because I cleaned chips out and wiped it down, because that's what we were told we were supposed to do. They said to us, said, this machine, you need to take care of it, because this is what puts food on your table. This is what puts money in your pocket. This is what feeds your children. I mean, you need to take care of this thing. You know, it has whey lube in it. It needs to be wiped down. It needs to be clean. I mean, this is what puts the money on your table. So take the time, clean the chips, do everything you can. This is your baby. And, you know, and that still makes sense to me today, because without that thing running, and a lot of people this day and age don't get it. Well, no, I'll just go to the next machine. If they don't have something for me to run, I'll go home and play on my fucking phone. You know, we cherished our machines, and they were a lot of older pieces of equipment. We took care of them, and they just kept on cranking. And when one went down, we tried to stay busy and move on to something else that we could still be working on before we got told to just go home. And, you know, it really does mean something when they say, you know, take care of this thing, because it is what's putting the food on your table.
Exactly. And it's like, we have this i300S Integrex, and it's like the kid that runs it. I mean, I went over there because he was out this week, and I went over there to set up a job once this other job was finished, and the thing was disgusting. And it's like, you have this, you know, big tool magazine. It holds 110 tools, and it's got these big, nice glass doors on the front of it, so you could see everything behind it. You couldn't even see through the door. You know, because it was so filthy. And it's just like, you know, it ticks me off, because it's like, this is that, you know, I used to dream about having a machine like this to run.
No doubt.
You know, and now we have it, and I don't get to run it that often. But it's the fact that this guy, you know, it's like, when he gets back, I'm going to explain to him, like, dude, there's a lot of guys that will never touch a machine like this in their entire career.
Yeah, you're exactly
right. There's
guys
that will never make anything that leaves the ground, let alone leaves this planet, you know, and that's what you're doing. Yeah, like, have some fucking pride in what you're doing.
You know, I get that. And I hear what you're saying, but what is the motivating factor then for people? Like, we've talked about that, you know, you've got nice machines, and that should be the motivating factor, but it appears that in this day and age, that doesn't seem to be enough. But why is that?
Because, well, their mom and dad. Their mom and dad never fucking yelled at him when they did something wrong when they were little. That's the problem.
Discipline. You're talking about discipline, aren't we?
I'm totally talking about discipline. Yeah. Because when I was talking to Boomer, it's like, take care of this machine, it's your bread and butter. It was an old fucking blue Supermax that had 15 stations that changed tool. And then you have a doors that had plexiglass things that slid over them. It was like 12 inches high. And you stood there with a piece of cardboard when you were running the fly cutter, because shit was going to hit you in the face. Or if you're going to be nice, you put a piece of cardboard up across the guy so he wouldn't get blasted in the face. That's the kind of shit you do. And it's like, it's just where we're at today. I mean, I don't mean, one want to sound like a broken record, and I probably do, but there's not the discipline. There's not the guys that go to work and get shit done, you know. And look at the old guys that work on bridges and do stuff and get stuff done. All the pictures that you see are all black and white. The guys that are doing shit and getting stuff done, they're not around anymore. If they are, they're far and few between.
Because I totally agree with what you're saying, because I also think when Albert was talking about, you know, the guys not taking pride of, you know, the workplace, and, you know, you've been busy, you know, being busy and keeping a tidy workspace, is that they should still go hand in hand. And what, you know, what you said is, if you can still allow yourself at least 15 minutes at the end of every day to just tidy your workbench up, clean the machine down, like, it just eventually you're having a really, really super tidy workshop. And I don't understand why people nowadays don't seem to want to do that, because it can't be everybody, can it? Like, not everybody can be so averse to...
You know what makes it easier, too, is if you do like you're talking about and you spend 15 minutes a day like kind of tidying up and cleaning up, it doesn't pile up then.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Totally. That's what
and
I'm talking about.
It's just
but why,
like if you keep up with it, it's that much easier.
But if you've got, let's just say, right, you've got, so you start with one guy. You employ one guy and you say, you know, do you need to drum it into him? Do you have to tell him, hey, look, I pay you till 5 o'clock, but I expect you to be here till 5:15 because you're going to clean your shit down. Like, are these guys going to do that, or are they just going to go,
fuck you.
You got to pay me?
No, they're going to call a labor attorney. And
we live in a nation of pussies now. We really do, because everyone needs their hand held. Everyone, you know, has their rights. And, you know, Tony, like kind of what you were talking about, I think the reason that you are the way that you are, which is great, is because of when you grew up and the time period in history in which you went through kind of like your early apprenticeship and you spent your shop time. And, you know, it's like things were just fucking different back then, you know?
But don't you set the tone, though, Albert? Like, if 100%. Someone comes in, if you say, listen to me, dickbag, like, this is how it's going to work. If you want to work here, these are the rules. And if you don't, then you fuck off. Like, because that's sort of what Tony was told when he was going through. And it's pretty much what I was told by my sergeant major of the Marines bloody guy when I started my apprenticeship. They say, you have to clean your machine. It doesn't matter. If you've halfway through the job, you finish the job. Like, it's just a...
Well, here's the deal. You can only play what's in your hand, Jody. If Albert has a bunch of freaking lame-ass people in his shop and he's trying to do the best that he can, he's going to try and do the best that he can. He's going to try to encourage him to clean, you know, take pride, this, that, and the other. But if they come in, like Boomer says, walking across the floor like a fucking sloth, you know, it's so frustrating because it's like you got these people and they're showing up and they're warm bodies and you're trying to point them in the right direction and do the right thing. But it's just so frustrating when it doesn't work out. You know, it's like, you know, when you go back to discipline, I mean, like I said, I'm the oldest out of all of us here. And that doesn't mean shit other than when I was at home, I did something wrong, I got my ass beat. When I went to school and I did something wrong, I got my ass beat. When I was working in a job shop and I did something wrong, I got fucking yelled at so hard that it would almost bring you to tears as an adult. So there was people always showing you what's right, what's wrong, how to do things, what you did wrong, and calling you an idiot if you're really fucked up. And you can't, like Boomer says, you can't do that anymore. You can't call people a homo. You can't call people a retard. I mean, it's just like, I watch these movies. I've watched a lot of movies where I just watched one last night, and it was funny because somebody was doing something, and in my opinion, this is a quote, it was gay. I don't mean gay as in like I like boys or girls. It was like fucking stupid, the adjective gay. And so the guy said, and even women said, that's gay, gay, gay. And I told the kid, I looked at Katie, I said, well, apparently, according to you, boss lady, we can't say that anymore. She's like, no, you can't. But that is funny. It's like times have changed, man. And so like Albert and Boomer and not myself, because I don't have any employees other than a couple. And I know, Jody, I don't know if you have any retards or people that are gay out there in New Zealand. Okay, you do.
It's well, a world phenomenon.
It's frustrating.
It's
what
not
we're
restricted
dealt, I mean, what,
to the United States of America.
The cards
yeah,
in
let's
our
just
hand
say,
are
let's
limited.
Just say I got called into HR because I looked someone straight in the eyes and I said, what the fuck is wrong with you?
That's
because
fine.
They did something like unbelievably stupid. And they went to HR and said that I was being aggressive and demeaning and rude and all this shit. And that was literally all I said is I looked at him and I said, what the fuck is wrong with you?
So here's the problem right here. If there's a job shop machining parts, point blank, I don't think there should be an HR, period.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, a job shop is a
job
shop.
We're not a job shop. So.
Well, he's a spice man.
Well, Boomer's good. Well, if I asked Boomer to make me some parts tomorrow, you wouldn't quote him?
I would quote him.
Okay, so then he's a job shop. But the thing is, if you got guys in there and what Boomer said to me is perfectly legit, I mean, I would look at him in the eye and go, you're right. I need to change my attitude or what I did. When you start running the HR, you might as well be fucking working for Walmart. And like you said, or like what fucking Albert said, oh, my guy's got a bellyache. This is where all the gay shit comes in. I'm sorry.
You need to separate the real machinist.
Yeah. And I mean, it goes back to there was, you know, another time that I was, oh God, what was I showing this guy? But he had just like the day before came to me like, you know, I'm invested in this company. I want to move ahead in this company. I want to move up. I want to become, you know, more of an asset to the company. I remember what it was. And he's asking me, you know, what can I do? What do I need to do? And I, you know, and we sat down and talked for like a half hour. And then, so it was at the end of the day on Thursday, we work, 4/10s, and then we have a weekend shift that's 3/12s. And it's at the end of the day on Thursday. And so I was still going in on Fridays. And so I was just walking around at the end of the day, kind of seeing where everything was at so that when I came in the next morning, I knew, you know, where everything was. And I asked this guy, I said, how's this running? And it was this quick, like second op, just like facing apart to length. Mm-hmm. And I think it took like, you know, like 30 seconds or something. And he goes, oh, these are almost done. There's six more parts. And I was like, okay, so you're going to just finish those out? And he just looks at me and he goes, it's 4:30, brother. I'm out of here. And it's just like, oh, okay. I'm glad to know that, you know, everything you said yesterday was a fucking load of shit. Like, come on, okay. Man.
Okay, so hold on. Let's just back the truck up, right? So initially we said, what would we do that will motivate employees? Now we bitched and moaned. No. It's relevant because we've all bitched and moaned about.
You're that, right. You know, need to circle back. Exactly.
We need to say what is the biggest motivating factor for somebody when they come into work? You know, is it money? Is it the pat on the back, like, oh my God, you're so amazing. Is it the constant, you know, fluffing around and, oh my God, you know, I'm so glad that you're here, or do none of those factors matter because people just don't care anymore. They just go, your job.
I've got your answer.
Okay.
I had the luxury of working with an older gentleman. I've talked about him before, but never mentioned his name. He was an old manual guy. And I actually lived with this guy, not in a gay relationship, but we were both going through divorces at the time too. So anyway, we confided as in really good friends. But anyway, he was a manual guy, and he's the one that actually had me headhunted from one shop to another because he went to one and recommended me to follow. And so one of the most important things that he did was he kept a clean area. He was a manual guy. His place was like spick and span. I mean, he would stop. He'd come in like on a Friday and just get pissed and stop and take the fan that was blowing on him apart, the screens, the blades, wipe it down, because once he did, you realize how much freaking coolant and mist and shit was in the air. It was blowing crud on him. So he would clean that. But his thing was, on Fridays, we're going to do a barbecue at the shop. And he would go to their local butcher and he'd get a couple tri-tips, and he'd get tortillas, he'd get beans, and morale is key for a group of guys, especially guys. And if they have a leader that want to follow them and they enjoy, like, this guy's going to do something, like on Friday, we're going to do tri-tip, we're going to slice it, we're going to make some amazing food. Or the next Friday, we're not going to do a barbecue, but he had what he called in his car a perpetual ice chest. So on Fridays, he would have already iced down. He'd get there in the morning. He'd go bags of ice. He'd buy a couple of 12 packs of Coors. And anybody that wanted to come out to the car after work and sit down in the parking lot across the street off company property, crack a cold one. I mean, enthusiasm, morale, donuts on a different day, bagels and cream cheese on another day. You know, somebody goes out fishing, catches tuna deep sea, you know, would do something. It's that kind of thing that boosts people morale. And that's, I did it in the beginning when I didn't have to run all the machines by myself. But that's something that I want to circle back to because, I mean, you know, I have a super small crew, but it's amazing what people's eyes will look like when you bring them something, whether it's going to make a Starbucks run and getting coffees or mochas or something stupid like that and hand them to them and say, man, let's make some chips. I mean, it doesn't take much to get people fired up. And I'm not saying that's going to make everybody 100% happy because we got a potpourri of people out there, but morale is key. And that's my only tip. I mean, that's the one thing I got to say. I would like to hear what you guys have to say.
Albert, what do you think?
As far as morale goes?
Motivating factors.
Anything.
Sometimes I don't know, to be honest. Like,
true.
I think a lot of it is money for people, but I don't think that it's money for everybody. I just think that some things, like other people just have other things going on in their life that they're focused on. And it doesn't even matter to them. It's just a job. You know, they go to their job because they're being responsible because they need to make money to afford their life. But it doesn't matter how much you beat it into their head, like, you know, or try to reward them or whatever. Like, it just doesn't matter to them. I'm not saying that's everybody, but like, you know, as far as Tony was saying, you know, the whole tri-tip story, I know Ryan does that at his shop, like, not necessarily tri-tips, but I think they shut down early on Fridays and then they do like, they do like a cookout or something for lunch, which is pretty cool. But I also think you need the right guys for that. Like, not everybody wants to do that. Not everybody goes to work to kind of just hang out and socialize, you know? I think the right group of guys would do it, but I don't know that everybody would be into that.
So there's the morale motivator. That sounds like it's actually probably the most powerful one. So, you know, by doing just random acts not planned acts. Like, you can just turn up and go, oh, here's, like you say, it's donut day, or we've had a really good couple of weeks, so I want to do this. I mean, that stuff is really important for morale. Then the monetary side of things, I mean, I think everybody should always be paid what they're worth. That's my opinion. It doesn't always correlate into reality, but it's, you know, idealistically, people should be paid what they're worth. And if suddenly there's you're having a bonus year and you can suddenly give someone a bonus, I mean, that's really, really cool. But what you don't want it to become is just the expectation, because often the more people earn, the more accustomed to that particular lifestyle they become, and then you get the opposite effect of it being a motivator.
True.
So then, is there something else? You know, what, Boomer? What would be the biggest motivator for you? Just say you're not in your position you're in now. You're going for a job at your place, but for you, What would be the key motivators that would make you want to continue to come back to work and to not look for another job?
I think just like transparency, like, you know, here's the expectation. Here's where we see you fitting in. Here's where we see you going here. Here's what we're looking for, you know, and just everything's real, you know, laid out. And here's the expectation. Here's what your duties are. And I mean, you have to set people up for success. And if they're not entirely clear on what their role is there or what's expected of them, then they're not going to succeed. And so that's something we really make an effort to do, because I've been in that position where, you know, is this my job? Is it not my job? You know, do I have the, you know, can I go and just say, hey, you know what? We fucking need this for the shop. I'm going to, you know, cut a, you know, $2,500 PO, you know, for this or whatever. Like, when you don't know, or you're not sure who you're, you know, is this person my supervisor? Are they my boss? Are they my manager? Are they just another guy here? Like, it's an awkward position to be in, and it makes you kind of, weary about your place in the whole thing. And so I think, you know, transparency is a big thing, and communicating with people. And we've talked about it before, at least me and you have, about, you know, just checking in with people every few months and, you know, talking to them and, you know, asking them, you know, are you happy with what you're doing? Do you want to be doing something else? How can we get you to where you want to be? And so I think that's a big part of it, is just interaction, not just, you know, the day in and day out of, you know, oh, hey, you know, are you doing your job? Everything all right? Okay, get back to work, you know?
So yeah. that sounds like you're talking about structure and career opportunities as being the main motivator.
Yeah, because, I mean, you always want to – people need, like, a path, you know, and it's always – and, you know, for some people, it's just that paycheck. That's the end goal. For some people, it's they want to become – you know, a great programmer, or maybe they want to move into, you know, doing the kind of shorter run stuff, or maybe they want to move into just doing things around the shop. You know, we had a maintenance guy, and at first he said, you know, my goal is to become a machinist, and he was a really good maintenance guy. He did everything to the T by the book. He was, I mean, really on top of things. And, we moved him into being an operator, and I worked with him for a couple months, and he was doing really good. And then, a few months later, he started not doing so good. And I pulled him in the office, and I was like, look, you know, I mean, we all have bad days, but it seems like it's been, you know, a bad month. Is anything going on? Is there anything, you know, you want to talk to me about? And he said, you know what, I really don't like doing this. I would prefer to go back to just doing maintenance. And so we put him back to doing maintenance because that was what he wanted to do, and he did a good job at it.
You know, I've got an example. You're talking about motivation, or, you know, getting people fired up about doing something special. Like I said, I have the girls, and then I got this one helper currently. And he's, like I said, jack of all trades and master of none, but he manages the chips. You know, we keep a lot of things separate, whether we're running 316L. I mean, you get paid more for that than you do 304 or 303. So we just throw that shit away. But when we do aluminum or doing brass or bronze, when the conveyor's running and I say, hey, look, you know, we just finished up this stainless, but we're running aluminum now, and I think it's pretty clean, but keep an eye on it. And if it cops up some stainless, you know, catch it with the dustpan, throw it in the mix bin, blah blah blah. And so this guy's on it. I mean, he's focused, he's trying to keep chips straight, you know, trying to keep things. So if you get a little bit of something and something, and they'll just write it off as scrap, and you freaking send a 4x4 bin and like fucking $20, it's not good. But this guy does the extra effort. And so when we get a check that's decent, even though prices are way down now, you know, I'll flip him some cash. I was like, hey, no, I appreciate you, because when the bins get full, he gets up in there on a ladder, he jumps up and down, he smashes them down so we can pack more in. And, you know, there's a lot of people that you couldn't get to do that. It's like, fuck, that's not my job. But this guy gets on the ladder, jumps up and down, gets a little baby pallet, smashes it. I think I could get more. And he packs it full, and he shuts the lid and says, we need a new bin. And this one has a hole in it, so let's plug the hole. I mean, once you show them that, hey, I'm going to share this with you, let's do a good job, something as simple as that, it motivates him. But, you know, like I said, we have this group for a reason, and we all touch on each other's feelings and know what we want and how we're dealing with it. And it's just too bad that Albert, Shane, Jody, myself, we don't have people like ourselves. I'm not saying we're anything fucking special, but that we care and that we would do a good job and we would work well with others. I mean, it's too bad that it's like we are what each other needs in our own environment.
Yeah. I feel like we should have a group hug right now. You want to do that?
Sorry, I'm wiping my tears right now.
I'm getting the butter.
Ooh.
He said group
He's
hug.
Getting the butter.
So, now, you guys are rad, man. Way rad.
Hey, I think thanks, Tony. I appreciate that. I know you're really talking to those guys, not me, but that's okay. Do you think that today's people in employment in engineering or machining or whatever, people's motivation to become a machinist is not because they really want to be a machinist. It has predominantly been because they just want a job. And because of CNC machinery and other sort of production style machining, It means that you can offer those types of people opportunities to just be operators as opposed to a fully fledged machinist. And maybe that's why you don't have the same drive or grab or whatever you want to call it. You know, like it's sort of like a diminishing skill, but you know, you've opened up the pool of people that you could potentially employ by making things a bit easier. However, what that means is that the people that suddenly, you know, say that they've run and operated an Akuma or a Mori or an Integrex or whatever, aren't necessarily the kind of people you really want, because they don't, the motivator isn't because they really want to be machinists. It's just because they want a job.
Here you go. Here's the thing. The people that are thriving on this, that want to do it, are the kids that are watching Jesse James, or they're watching Orange County Choppers, or they're even watching Titan. If they see CNCs and they're seeing rims and custom stuff done, and they want to do that, then they want to be involved. But the other kids, and this is what I've gathered from my own kids that I've just listened to them talk about, you know, in college and such, everybody's like, oh, he's going to make it far. He's into code. I'm like, well, what the fuck is code? Well, you know, programming, this, that, and the other. I'm like, oh, yeah, I do know programming, but I mean, what type of code you're talking about? Well, it's just like code. He's studying code. It's code, code, code. I'm like, okay, well, I get that. I know what code is. There's a lot of different codes. But that's where you get the freaking CAD/CAM babies that pop out, because I've hired a lot of young kids, and they're like, look, I've got bitching equipment here. I buy nothing but the best freaking tooling, and I've got great Hankstrafer's coolant, so we're making beautiful parts. But you don't want to run my machine. You want to sit down at the computer and be a CAD/CAM baby and you know, rotate things 360 degrees and go, look at this, look at that, look at this, look at that. Am I going to be able to finish this with the ball? Am I going to surface this? Am I going to do this? What? It's just, they skipped over all that. So the people that aren't interested in watching stuff on TV, like making mag wheels and making motor parts and stuff like that, they don't want to be a machinist. But, you know, like you said, I never knew I wanted to be a machinist. I almost flunked fucking metal shop in high school. I got a D. But I just landed in the right spot at the right time after the motorcycle shop closed, and that's what happened. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't pick it. You know, I went there, and then I saw it, and then I got enthused. And so kids these days, like we have all talked about before, video games, you know, my daughter, she just got back from the eye doctor yesterday. And you know what he told her? He's all, yep, your eyes are stabilizing, but you need to go outside and spend an hour and a half, at least an hour every day outside and just stare at the sky. And she looked like, what? And he's all, every time you look at technology, it shrinks your eyes. It makes you closer and more focused to astigmatism, because you're looking at screens. You're just freaking zeroed in on stuff. You're not looking at the freaking horizon or trees or skies or dogs. And I didn't even think about that until she told me. I was like, you know what? When I walk outside and look around, I instantly feel better and my eyes are more relaxed. But when I walk in and look at screens or look at calipers, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's something as simple as that.
Wow. But if you go on, Albert. Sorry.
I was just going to say, as far as your CAD/CAM baby comment, you know, like you're kind of talking about like one extreme polar opposite of the other. You've got people who like literally have no fucking clue what to do in a shop. And then you've got people who just want to sit in front of a computer and program. But I think that certainly for me, like part of the attraction was that like you do spend some time at the computer programming stuff, thinking things through, setting things up, thinking about your strategy, whatever. But then the fun part, you get to take it out into the shop, into the real world, and physically see if what you kind of dreamed up actually works. And that's true. You get to, and maybe this is partially like having some pride in your work and in the things that you do and being able to create something yourself. But I got like a huge amount of satisfaction out of that. Like you're literally starting with nothing and you're ending up with something by the end of the day. Like that's fucking cool.
That's way cool. And here, for the record, I am not somebody that disses on CAD/CAM babies, even though I say that a lot. But in a nutshell, like where I came from, Albert, on the old Akumas, there was what was called IGF. And you programmed out at the machine. And so you drew the material, You picked a rough turn, a finished turn, a drill, a threader, a groover, a wide groove, whatever. I mean, so you're CAD camming out at the machine. You're standing there, and then you post it, and then you go through and tweak it. And then if you get really good, you adjust your parameters on IGF, so it just spits it out, so you don't have to tweak anything. And that's the same thing. But there's these kids that don't want to go get dirty or breathe coolant, and they sit in a room with glass windows, and they're doing the programming. Those are the CAD CAM babies.
Not the ones
that are out the machine, but the ones that don't want to get dirty.
But they need the motivation to make them realize how exciting it is when you do, like Albert's described, you do a little bit of this, and then when you go out there, what you've been doing, like fucking around on the computer, you can actually make it into something that's going to help in the world. I mean, I think that's the coolest ever. I love that.
It is.
Everybody works a little bit differently, I think, as far as what motivates them. And I think that if there's one thing to be learned from this conversation, that's definitely it. And you kind of almost have to know every individual in your shop or your workplace enough to know kind of what drives them. And you can kind of steer them in the right direction, I guess. I don't know. I mean, like I said, for me personally, like I think necessity is the mother of invention, right? So like if you have a need to do something and a desire to maybe build like a better mousetrap, or like, you know, they don't make this, or like I can't afford to buy this, so like I'm gonna just make it kind of attitude. I mean, that's just like a generally motivated attitude in general. If you have that attitude, like that's step one. You know, like, Tony, your story earlier about the whole coolant pump and your whole fiasco with that, like, that is literally hot rodding 101. Your necessity, your fucking need was you need to get that fucking machine back online so that you can make parts, so that you can make money, so that you can feed your fucking family. Mm-hmm. And anything it takes, literally anything it takes, you would have fucking put bubble gum and duct tape on it if it made it work.
Yeah.
So you were just being resourceful, and that's called taking ownership for your fucking like responsibilities, you know, and you don't have a choice.
No, you don't. You're right. And I even went to Home Depot and before I decided to tear apart the other pump and bought some fucking JB Weld, because I thought fucking Hank was going to put that shit back together if he had to. But you know what? This is like what boomers talked about in the past, too. It's like people, like you said, you know, we can build this, we can make this, this would be rad. But then there's the people like Boomer was talking about. It's like, well, you know what? If I want that, I'll just go fucking Amazon, click it. If I click it and it shows up, great. If I click it and it says 3 days, I'll wait. That's what we're dealing with.
I've never tried to discourage somebody from like making something that they want, even if it's something that you can go buy on Amazon for like $3 or whatever.
Yeah.
Certain things are just not worth it, but like, I don't know. I always thought the best way to teach somebody how to program is for them to kind of have like an idea or a project of their own. That way they've got a little bit of skin in the game, and they're like, oh, well, this would be really cool. Or if I make this, like one of my old employees, I think he made like, he did like a plaque or something for like his girlfriend that he was dating and like engraved their names on it or something. And it was like,
wow.
You know, it's kind of like dorky or whatever, but like it's really cool.
Still, he wanted to do it.
Pride. He had some pride in what he was doing, and he was like kind of showing that to that chick or whatever. And I think that's cool. Like, who am I to cut somebody down for like that? No. You know, like you
just want to. What else did he write on it? What did he write on the plaque?
I don't remember. It was years ago. Probably safe. Like, hey, sorry, you're going to be a hoe to me in the future.
Wait, was it you, Albert? Albert, did you write this?
No, that's legitimately.
So are you going to break my heart?
Good guess, but no. Jesus Christ, you guys are laughing. You know what that means.
Oh, fuck you, man.
He's not laughing.
To finish up this topic, actually understanding or having a foundational base for what you believe is pure motivators is also a really good way to try to interview people. Like, do you think if you said, okay, we're talking about boosting morale, of course there is a monetary value that could be a motivator, and structure and opportunities. So you encourage somebody, which is the hook, to buy money. You say, righto, this is what the money is. So that's the first indicator. But the two really important ones are their own self-motivation plus what they actually want to get out of working for your company. Yeah. So would that be a good summary?
You know, I'm going to make this short, but when I was looking for jobs in the early stages, it was never about money. It was about getting a job.
Why? Yeah. Yeah.
But I think the money thing, as long as it's not the, you know, well, if I made more, then I would work harder. As long as it's not that, and it's just that they know that they're appreciated and they're secure, comfortable, then that's fine. But I'll work harder if I make more. That's a bunch of shit.
It is.
Honestly, Shane, that's kind of a mindset, though, because, like, in the same work environment, in the same shop, like at your shop, for example, you could have two employees, one that has that attitude and one that doesn't. Same management, same shop, different attitude.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, I always say that everyone cuts their own deal. And if you're not happy with your deal, that's on you, and it's not on anybody else.
Well, gents, we've reached the end of the episode. God, it went pretty quick today. It was good. Good topics. Good grunty topics to talk about, you know? None of this mamby-pamby bullshit that sometimes you hear, you know?
It was plenty mamby-pamby.
Sorry for dragging on about the coolant pump, but you know what? That was fucking my life for a week. But
hey, that's been the saga of IG for the last week or two.
It's been beautiful.
It's been so everyone's nice. Been on the edge of their seat wondering what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay, I have.
I'm sure you have. I turned on my
notifications for when Tony posted.
I do feel your sincerity.
I just I look at that and I just shake my head because that is literally the shit show of owning a machine shop.
I've dealt with trying to get parts from Grunfos, and so I know exactly what Tony's going through.
Yeah. Okay. I don't want to do right now is repeat the entire show again. So let's say goodbye to everybody. Albert, say goodbye.
Hey, we were just being nice to each other. You know what? The fuck? Chill out. We were being friends.
Just kick me off, for fuck's sake.
God damn, Jody, why are you hurting yourself? You got to go to bed? What the fuck?
It's only 11 o'clock. I haven't eaten since Friday night. Yeah, see you later.
And he hasn't even fed the cat yet.
Just want to talk. What the hell?
Hey, come on. Stay on the line. Jody, go home.
I'm not going home. I am home.
Just go, Jody. Just go. It's okay. We don't need you.
Fuck you.
That was good talking to you guys, man. I mean, it's been a stressful week for me, maybe 2 weeks, a couple of years. But anyhow, it's good to hear you guys. And you guys are battling and all in your different own battles. But this is really still therapy for me to talk to you guys.
Yeah.
This was a solid fucking episode. I feel like we were all vibing here. This is good.
You know what? You know, Albert, you were fucking funny today, dude. You were on point in the chat.
I was Tony. I think it's because we were stupid.
Because what?
Because we were stupid. That's why he was funny.
No, I meant in the chat earlier when he was like talking about Shane and this, that, and he was on point, and I said something about sending the butt plug because it's been somebody's butt. He said, you fucked up. You should have said your anus. I'm like, dude, you're on point. Wait.
True. When he said I had a really big dong, he was really on point.
What are you talking about? When did anyone say that?
He was talking
just between us.
He was talking about your mic. Bro. Oh shit, that was our just the chat with me and Albert, not the group chat. My bad.
Lay off the gummies, Boomer.
So for everybody listening, we want to thank you for taking the time to listen to us here at Machinist Therapy Hotline. And remember, if you want to get involved, you just need to send us a direct message or flick us an email via our Gmail account. Link is in the bio. We will see you next time from all of us here, Machinist Therapy Hotline. Adios, amigos.